Diversity Music Group. Alex H. The Bomb Factory. Success.
Ladies and gentlemen, allow me to properly introduce the most incredible beast from the east, live and living color. NJ fitted to leather and soft butter. Color up, my dollars up on winning exotic cars to women, women and more women. More sinning, I'm addicted to success. Blessed, young and gifted, the bar's been lifting. Started from the bottom, I'm now on top of the world. Look, ma, I made it, new, most hated. Underestimated since I haven't been painting. Our stories aren't related, so they don't believe. But who cares, I'ma run a few years before I fade to black. My impact shift back to order to lyrical manslaughter. In the first degree, I am king. Young, young, fresh, fresh. Don't say that y'all break, y'all fresh. Popping bottles, blowing clouds of blue. Dream chase, want my life to you. Success, success. Young, young, fresh, fresh. Don't say that y'all break, y'all fresh. Popping bottles, blowing clouds of blue. Dream chase, want my life to you. Success, success.
This just took a couple of weeks off before I could slide right back in on cue. That's right. Boys and girls, good morning. Happy Sunday. It is your host, Joseph Haas here, Joseph Haas NFL, Jersey Haas on Twitter. What up, y'all? It is the Green and White Show. Back, and better than ever. Missed you guys. It's been a long couple of weeks. Can't wait to get into all that has transpired since the last time we spoke. Are they still playing in East Lansing? Going to have to check that out. And new. Yes, three times in a row. We'll talk a whole lot of UFC as well. We'll get into the beginning of the hockey season. We'll get to the end of the baseball season. We'll get into the NBA season, which is heating up. News around the NFL as well. That's right. Even my Niners making moves. Let's get into the flight plan, shall we? You know I hit you with the first 15 as we get the show started. Then, of course, our buddy, he joins us from Lombardi Ave. That's right, our buddy, the Reverend Ralph Mancini, will jump on for the Mancini Report, get us caught up on all the football we've missed, plus predictions and a whole lot more there. Then I go into some topics that definitely perturbed me during the last couple of weeks. Talk about a fight or two that I've seen, even a boxing match that went. Did it go long? We'll talk about that. And then we have our Sunday conversation. That's right. You know what it is. The great debate time with our buddy Brian Benway, at Brian Benway on Twitter. Follow him there. Check him out here. Top of the hour, 9 a.m. for that. And then we close the show out with a couple of final shots. That's right, folks. It's the Green and White Show. It's back, and let's get it started now. Are you ready to talk some Jets football or what? That's right. Real sports talks moved out on a political tip. With that underground appeal to it, we are back and better than ever. Now, let's talk about a game that started at noon Eastern time. It didn't end until nearly 7 Eastern time. That's right. Weather delay and all. Penn State taking another loss, this time at the hands of the boys from East Lansing, Michigan State, able to topple Penn State. Big losses for the Big Ten yesterday as both Penn State and Ohio State take L's. We'll talk about what that means for Big means for a couple of the other football teams in the division who seem to be on a roll. How will that impact them? Something that impacted me when I saw it, seeing Deshaun Watson go down. Got to talk to the Rev about that a little later in the program, but I teased it, and I have to start off with three new champions as everybody moved their clock back a bit and enjoyed the extra hour. These guys enjoyed an extra hour of celebration. Rose Namajunas, T.J. Dillashaw, and, of course, GSP. It seemed like a return of old champions as TJ and GSP showed you why they won the belts the first time around. And Rose Namajunas coming all the way back. That little dominator, the little eliminator herself. I love Joanna Jędrzejczyk. I didn't think she could be beat. But if you kind of took a look at the last few fights of hers, they weren't as dominating as the beginning of her career. Five straight decisions. Some would say it was bound to happen, and Rose was the one with the powerful left hand to take out Joanna Jędrzejczyk. I didn't think I'd see her lose that belt. I thought I'd see her lay that belt on the mat. But no, Rose laid Joanna out on the mat. Another strong performance by the UFC. Unbelievable fight card. You had OSP in the undercard. unbelievable fight card. TJ Dillashaw showing why he's not just a guy who can defend on the ground, but one of the better stand-up athletes in the UFC, straight punching Cody Garbrandt out. I wouldn't want to call him a paper champion, but TJ said it. He wanted his belt back, and he's fought hard the last couple of years to get himself back into contention and got himself opportunity against a nemesis and proved that he still had that championship medal. So congratulations to two of the three and new. And now, Michael Bisping. Some would say he wasn't a dominant-type fighter. I would say every time he got in the ring, he definitely proved himself to be better than his opponent. He had a pretty good championship run, but will he be remembered as a good champion, especially as GSP really dominated him in a fight where it looked like a guy coming off a four-year retirement was the more comfortable fighter in the ring. There was an attack from GSP that Michael Bisping really – once he was put on the defensive in the end of the first round, reaching back for the fence, looking for ways away from GSP's attack, GSP throwing a couple and then quick to the ground game as well. That's where he took him the last couple of rounds. Impressive stand up, aggressive with the jabbing front kick and finishing him off choke style. Just to see champions like Joanna tap out, to see Cody dropped, to see Bisping just basically KO'd and saved by the ref. It was an incredible night of UFC fights, three and news. Plus, you got a little boxing in the mix. Not really a big enough fight to talk about, but an outstanding fight night again. UFC wins, boxing loses, NCAA football sprinkled in throughout. You got yourself a little bedlam. You had Oklahoma doing their thing. We'll run through the scores as well. But again, another great night for the UFC. Don't forget, in just a couple of weeks, they've got another huge event starting in December. Another title fight. We'll see Holloway go ahead, and he'll have to put that belt up against Frankie Edgar. Don't forget, you'll see Mighty Mouse as well. He'll also be out there fighting in the next couple of months. Title defenses. You've got some of the better champions now in the fight game, holding belts. All the fights you want to see are being made, and that's why the UFC is one of the most dominating forces in the fight game for years to come. Dominating the podcast scene? Trying to, anyway. It's your boy, at Jersey House on Twitter, Joseph Haas NFL on Instagram. That's right, the Green and White Show. Glad to have everybody joining us here on this Sunday. Wow. November 5th, we are flying through the year. Just a couple more months to go until the end of 2017. The holiday season is fresh upon us. The birthday season is fresh upon us. We'll have a few of those coming up as well in the upcoming weeks. That's right, Mom, I haven't forgotten you. That's right, Yama, I haven't forgotten you either. And my brother, too. Wow, November's really a big birthday month, so I'll be all over those. How about this? Is anybody all over the New York sports scene like the baseball Mets and Yankees are? Both making managerial decisions over the past couple of weeks. I didn't think Joe Girardi was gonna be let go that unceremoniously. I really, but the longer he went without that contract, you kind of knew you could see the writing on the wall. The change was going to happen, and winds of change have blown both through Citi Field and the new Yankee Stadium. So we'll see what's in store for both those baseball teams as we'll put a bow on this year's Major League Baseball season and congratulate the Houston Astros on their performance in Game 7 and throughout the World Series, and basically throughout the postseason. I mean, they had to, you know, battle teams like the Yankees and a young group of upstarts, and led by Jose Altuve, and controversy aside, and we hope we can kind of put that behind us and the ugliness of that. Very, very interesting, very entertaining, very balls flying out of the yard World Series, which I thought was just kind of, I mean, after a while, you're watching every batter, it was either strikeout or home run. There was almost no in-between baseball there. And that leads a lot of people who were talking about the baseballs throughout the season, talking about the baseballs throughout the playoffs, and then had to talk about the baseballs during the World Series. Yeah, a little shaky, but we'll put this one away and see if Aaron Judge hits 50-some home runs next year, and we'll see if Bellinger hits 40-some home runs next year. So I'll be keeping my eyes on that. How about eyes on the rest of the sporting world? Like I said, we're going to run through the top 25 in the NCAA at the bottom half of the hour. We'll get into a little NBA in the bottom half of the hour as well. NHL heating up, we'll get into that. But before we roll into the Mancini Report with our buddy, the Reverend Ralph, he'll be joining us in a couple. I wanted to really just kind of talk about the quarterback that, you know, I've talked about him since the beginning of the season, thought he should have gotten the starting job then. Wasn't able to win it out of camp, according to the head coach. Either way, second half of the first game, they were able to make the right decision to put this guy in. He's flying ever since. And to see Deshaun Watson go down, knee injury, non-contact, out for the season, surgery, see that happen. So wishing him the best and a speedy recovery, and hopefully the takeover in 2018 is all Deshaun Watson. He comes back to a team he's ready to QB. Let's give that kid a chance. I mean, robbed of two Heismans, and now it just feels like robbed of the end of a what was looking like a very, very, very entertaining rookie campaign. So, you know, best wishes to the Deshaun Jack, Deshaun Watson on a speedy recovery. And man, just can't wait to see him sling the rock around next year. So the Texans lose their star on offense, and Deshaun Watson already losing their star on defense. J.J. Watt celebrating a World Series championship, but not really celebrating as I look towards their NFL team and see some of their captains down for the count. Hopefully all of y'all up. Hope so. Got the extra hour in. Green and White Show at Jersey Haas here. All of you there. Glad to have you all joining us here again on the program. Now, I brought up at the beginning of the show the game in East Lansing between Penn State and Michigan State. And I'll you know, dabble in a little bit before the Mancini Report. I just couldn't help but watch that game and wonder, you know, if it was a pro game, how things would have been handled, whether or not, I mean, does anybody remember that those were all college kids out there playing for what could have been a 10-hour day, an 11-hour day between 7 a.m., wake up and walkthroughs and 12 noon kickoff for a road gate for the kids from Penn State. That must have been a very long, grueling day. And you just wonder. You think about college athletics and where it is. And just remember, those kids aren't getting paid. Talk about scholarships all you want. Talk about how else they're compensated on campus. Everybody else around that game makes money. The advertisers make money. The NCAA, the Big Ten, everybody who wanted to see that game continue through and around the lightning delay. Everybody but the kids, really. Everybody but the kids. And to see a game like that go into overtime and to see Penn State lose that road game on a field goal like that, they deserved a little better than that on Saturday. Didn't get it. Didn't get it from the NCAA and didn't get it from all of us. So I just thought I'd make a mention of those kids out there, and they fought hard and played very valiantly. Just an alpha Penn State, and to be perfectly honest, I'm not one of those who's in the mood to see Penn State thrust into the national championship soon just yet. Things are still a little too tender for me in that area, but I just, you know, thought about the kids out there and kind of felt bad for the position they were put in last night. One team with a win, one team with a loss. Are you getting a little bit closer to bowl eligibility? Nebraska getting a little bit closer to the end of their season. Both challenged in the Big Ten, clearly, but moving hopefully in the right direction. Or are you with Ash continue to roll in the right direction, continue to maintain that New Jersey talent? Will Nebraska move in a different direction from Coach Riley? And that we wait to see at the end of the season. University of Florida decided, you know what, we're not waiting to the end of the season. They go ahead and make a move at the top. That's going to be a costly move for Florida. Every week it seemed like I'm watching Darren Revelle tweet how expensive it would be for Florida to cut ties with Musgrave, and they finally did, and it had to happen. And So Florida begins the rebuilding, era for the Gators now. Will they be able to catch up quicker than Florida State has, who looks like they've tumbled a bit this year? The battle for Florida continues, but there's just one team in Florida right now that is, you know, head over heels, the best team in the state, and that's the U. The Hurricanes are back. The University of Miami is all the way back. Undefeated, undaunted, looks like they're the ones being slighted as far as the top spot is concerned. No mention of them in the top five as far as the bowl championship series. I still look at Notre Dame as a shaky team, though. A very, very, statement-type win last night. Notre Dame hasn't given me really any other reason other than the fact that they are whom they are for me to doubt them in terms of being a good football team. It just seems like Notre Dame goes through their schedule, they get to the toughest games, and they just don't seem to be as competitive or as strong or have the bodies. Put a Notre Dame on a field with a team like Alabama and see how they compete. I tell you what, I never have to worry about the competition level when it comes to our first guest of the day. That's right, folks, the Reverend Ralph Mancini joins us from Lombardi Ave. Hits us up here on the Green and White Show for the Mancini Report. We're going to talk a whole lot of NFL and catch up on the last couple of weeks. Good morning, Reverend. Happy Sunday. How you doing, my man?
I'm doing great, man. How are you?
I am doing awesome on this Sunday morning. I'm ready for a full slate of NFL games. We had an awesome night at college football. I got as many fights in as I could possibly get. It's been a long night rolling into an awesome Sunday. Business rep, we haven't had a chance to speak since Aaron Rodgers went down for Green Bay. First off, I know you cover the Green Bay Packers there for LombardiAz.com, so please tell me. You see Rodgers go down. You see how the team kind of responds and rallies. Give me your thoughts on how you see the Green Bay Packers without Aaron Rodgers for the foreseeable future.
Well, the way I look at it is it's time for the other players to step up at this point. I think that, you know, the coaching staff, I think the defense and other parts of the team, they became a little bit too dependent on Aaron Rodgers, you know, and sometimes it's psychological, you know, it's like, well, you know what, it's like, we're going to give up 30 points, but, you know, we got Aaron Rodgers, so, you know, he could bail us out. And that type of thinking can get you in trouble because there are going to be games and Aaron Rodgers maybe doesn't have it, or there could be times when Aaron Rodgers goes down with an injury. And this is exactly what happened 3 weeks ago against the Minnesota Vikings. And, you know, now, you know, you have other parts of the team that have to step up. And, you know, a lot of people, you know, they want Brett Hundley to be the guy that's going to take the reins and lead the team. And that's a little unrealistic. You're talking about somebody who's been in the league, yes, three seasons, but somebody who's attempted 69 passes in those three seasons. So he's right. Going to have to go through a period where he's got to learn. He's got to go through things that he's never experienced before. Aaron Jones has been a revelation for sure. So I'm expecting, you know, good things out of him. But what about the defense? You know, that's what I'm talking about. The defense.
Is it time to call out that Packers defense?
Yeah, the defense continually has been a disappointment year in, year out. Dom Capers, the defensive coordinator, is somebody that has to take the blame for the failings of this defense. You know, they draft guys, they sign guys from free agency, and still they're having a lot of the same issues they had last year, both in pass coverage and in other parts of the team. You know, the pass rush is okay, but their run defense also leaves something to be desired as well. So that's what I see with this team. If they don't pick up other parts of the team, they're not going anywhere. with a defense that's, you know, going to give up yards and big plays as they did last year. As for Brett Hundley, yeah, the kid's promising. He's got a lot of talent, a lot of physical ability, but there's only so much you can expect out of him, I think, at this point. And so I don't know, man. It's a week to week thing. Now, can they beat the Detroit Lions? Yeah, of course they could, but it's going to be a close game. They're going to need a lot of things to go right. So I don't know. I'm looking at, you know, their remaining schedule. They don't have a lot of, you know, Super Bowl contenders on that schedule. I think they should be able to win about four or five games, but ultimately I see them probably coming in at probably like 8-8, and that's not going to be good enough for them to make the playoffs.
The run without Aaron Rodgers begins Monday night at home as they host the Detroit Lions, as the Reverend Ralph just mentioned. A team that can put up points, a team that can strike for big plays. The Detroit Lions will be playing outdoors on a cool night in November. So that might be a little bit of an advantage for the Green Bay defense. But again, just like you mentioned, the team that can put up points in the Lions, the team that can stretch the field in the Lions will be a challenging task for the Packers, the Rodgers Packers. So on the era begins in Green Bay in earnest. We'll see how long it takes before they've get their captain and quarterback back. So there's your Monday night tussle there, Detroit and Green Bay, as we speak here with our buddy, the Reverend Ralph Mancini. Don't forget to follow him on Twitter at Reverend Ralph. Let's get into the first game of the week. The New York Jets surprising everyone, putting points on the board. Now, the way that game ended, we'll remind people of how the game began, which was a strong effort by the guys in green. Defense showing out, even special teams making a bit of an impact. But the most surprising thing of 2017 for the Jets has been the quarterback play of Josh McCown. Like, who thought this guy was going to come in here and be an effective NFL starter, especially after, you know, the honeymoon the Jets had with the Ryan Fitzpatrick era, which came and went. So now another retread backup now starter for the Jets and Josh McCown. Reverend Ralph, your thoughts when you see Josh McCown leading this Jets team to, look, they're very impressive. They've surprised. You look at the rest of their schedule. Can they keep this up after the 34-21 victory against the Buffalo Bills?
Well, yeah. I don't know. I mean, it's tough to say whether or not, you know, they're going to be good enough to, you know, claim a wild card berth. But, you know, they're doing some of the things that in this game in particular, I like the fact that they focused on the run. And, you know, in their prior loss to the Atlanta Falcons, I know that, you know, Matt Forte, and he's a guy that, you know, doesn't say much, but when he does speak, you're going to have to listen because, you know, he's been in the league for a long time. He's a guy who's serious about his craft. And, you know, he pointed out, hey, we're just not running the ball enough. And I love the commitment that they made against the Buffalo Bills. Now, look, that was a Thursday night game. The Buffalo Bills were terrible. They didn't show up. They were missing tackles. But that's not the point. The point is that the Jets, they focused on running the ball. They minimized mistakes. And then they also have players on the other side of the ball on defense also step up as well. You're seeing Mo Wilkerson making more plays. And a guy like DeMario Davis is really coming into his own as well. So I like the fact that, again, they're playing, I don't know, I guess you could say a conservative brand of football. At least they did the other night. And that's going to allow them to be competitive against most teams. So you got to like the direction that they're going in. As for Josh McCown, in the past, we've seen signs of him put together some good games. And I think he's the type of guy that, you know, if you give him enough protection, I think that, you know, he could be good enough to win you some ball games. The whole question is that, You know, he is 38 years old. You know, is he going to be able to stay healthy the rest of the way? So far, so good. You know, when the guy's surrounded by good talent and he's being protected, he's a decent quarterback. I always thought he was. So, and you know, and for people that are saying, well, let the young kids in, you know, see what you have with the young kids. I haven't seen anything out of the young kids to make me think that, you know, they're going to be the franchise quarterback. I think, you know, that guy, you know, the next quarterback, the next, you know, Joe Namath, if you will, I don't think he's with the team yet. I don't think they drafted that player yet. So while you have Josh McCown playing the way he is, you got to stick with him, see things through, and you know, maybe hopefully, you know, you could make the playoffs and get a wild card spot.
Looking at the Jets, who would have thought we'd be talking about a postseason? We were thinking early in the season, and who wasn't thinking the Jets would be discussing first round draft picks and watching the college scene for who their next quarterback could be. But who knows? They might have their guy under center for this year and next. The guy of the future, though, I agree with you, might still be out there. And I agree with you, the Jets, if they're not looking long-term with this, this short-term success should not derail what their long-term plan should be, kind of a la what the Yankees did in terms of having a team that, you know, they structured to rebuild. And they didn't get away from that, even though the team started to win during the mm-hmm. season. They didn't go ahead and say, hey, look, you know what, let's throw it all in for this season and trade this player and that player, get some veterans and try to sell out for this season. So let's just hope the Jets stay the course. And if they've got a plan, let's go ahead and see them execute that plan. Reverend Rob joining us here from Lombardi Ave on the Mancini Report. Hey, Rev, you know what happens when there's a light NFL schedule? And I say light because there's only about 6 or 7 1 p.m. start games. Everybody is on notice. It's like all of these games take a bit of a get to be scrutinized a little bit more. They take on more of a feel because, you know, more eyeballs are on you. So people will be looking in places like in Tennessee and Jacksonville that normally wouldn't be with teams like Chicago, Cleveland, Minnesota, New England, Pittsburgh, and Los Angeles on the bye. Six teams on the bye means the short schedule. Now, what team out there, Rev, are you going to be keeping your eye on this Sunday? Will it be the Indianapolis Colts after announcing that Andrew Luck won't be back this season? Will you be looking to see what direction that team heads into? How about the Denver Broncos visiting the Eagles, Reverend Ralph? They've got questions at their quarterback position as well. Seems like everybody does. What team are you looking at with quarterback issues, Rev?
Quarterback issues. Okay. Well, you mentioned the Denver Broncos. They're in a tough spot right now. I think it started from that loss to the New York Giants, which nobody anticipated.
Right.
That team just didn't show up. And that started the downfall of Trevor Siemian. He just, again, when the running game is not working or when the defense has a couple of lapses, Trevor Siemian is the type of guy that just, he just looks like a scared chicken back there, just panicking. But, you know, kind of reminded me of Mark Sanchez back in the day. Not to digress now, but the Denver Broncos, they're in a situation right now where it's kind of like do or die. They're going to have to start showing some signs of life, and it starts today against the Philadelphia Eagles. Now, I think that I don't know what they're going to get out of Brock Osweiler. I think what they want to do is they're just going to need him not to make mistakes, make solid decisions, and not necessarily put up 350 yards and 3 touchdowns or 4 touchdowns, but just manage the team and let the defense sort of set the tone. And so I think that they're going to play their hearts out today. I'm not telling you they're going to win, but I think they will be competitive. I think they're going to play their hearts out, and they're going to make this a ball game because their backs up are against the wall, and if they lose this game, it's you know, it's going to be really demoralizing, and you know, they're probably looking at a season where they're not going to make the playoffs if they don't win this game. So I'm going to be looking at them today, see, you know, what they have left, to see, you know, if they could summon their energies and pull off the upset against the Philadelphia Eagles. Because, you know, we know how things work in the NFL. There is no dominant team out there. I know the Philadelphia Eagles are probably the best team so far, but teams, they have a letdown week at some point, you know, and this could be the week where the Philadelphia Eagles maybe don't show up, or maybe don't play as hard as the opposition. You know, a lot of these teams, they cannot handle prosperity. When the media is up on them all the time, you know, they're going to be weeks where they don't show up. So maybe this is the week where Denver, you know, they go out there and they take care of business. They pull off the upset, just like the Giants did against them a few weeks back. So I'm going to be looking at the Denver Broncos for sure.
Wow, Reverend Ralph, looking heavy at the boys from the Rocky Mountains. Will the Eagles soar against the no-fly zone? Big road test for Denver out there in Philly. The best the NFL has to offer against one of the best defenses. But again, like you said, Denver's offense, a very big question. You know what, Rev? A lot of people have been questioning the offense of the Carolina Panthers. Their big play, big strike ability. Where has he gone? Where has Cam Newton's ability to strike down the field gone? And he's been frustrated by a lot of those questions. Let's not forget, there's been a lot of other things going on around the team as well, around the media as well, and around Cam Newton as well, which could obviously frustrate him. But keeping it strictly to football, where have the big strike, big plays gone from the Carolina Panthers offense? Because they're hosting a team, a division rival in the Atlanta Falcons, who are going to put up points, who are going to make big plays, who are going to strike downfield. Panthers better respond, or they're looking at taking yet another L. Your thoughts on Cam Newton and where the long ball's gone?
Yeah, I don't know. That's a strange team. It's a strange offense. They're very week to week. You know, I watched the Panthers about 3 or 4 weeks ago go to Detroit and just probably play their best game of the season. But then they can't duplicate that from week to week. They're so inconsistent. So, you know, now they traded away Kelvin Benjamin. And that that was one of the guys that Cam Newton relied on a lot. I think what they want to do is they want to start featuring the younger players. I'm talking about Christian McCaffrey, okay, and I'm talking about Curtis Samuel. Those are two guys that bring an element of speed and quickness and even excitement to that offense. So I think that they're going to be going through sort of a transition phase right now. So they're going to try to feature a few different players. And there's also Russell Shepard, another backup that's going to see more time, also brings a lot of speed to the offense as well. So I think they're going through a transition phase. I don't know if they're going to be able to pull off a win today against the Atlanta Falcons, another team that's, you know, desperate and trying to right the ship. But I really don't know what to expect from the Carolina Panthers. They have some talent. They have some pieces. I think the injury to Greg Olsen has really hurt the offense. It's taken away sort of a security blanket for Cam Newton. So I don't know. It's wait and see with that team. I do think they have some interesting pieces, but I also think that they're missing something out of that backfield. Jonathan Stewart's not the same player he was a few years back. He's not as explosive as he once was.
Okay.
Christian McCaffrey's a nice player, but he's not, you know, the type of guy, that 230, 240-pound back, you know, that's going to be able to run the ball 30 times a game a la, you know, Leonard Fournette, for instance. So they need that type of player. I don't think they have him on the roster right now. So they're going to have to work with what they have. And as for Cam Newton, he's got to be more accurate. You know, he's got to make better decisions back there. He's got to be more precise. And I know he's competitive. I know he wants to win. I know he can do it if he puts his head to it. But it's hard to say whether or not they're going to be successful or not.
How about shifting gears, going all the way out west to a team who's still looking for their first W of the NFL season? Yep, my San Francisco 49ers making a move this week and getting themselves, hopefully, their quarterback of the future. And even if not the quarterback of the future, I like the fact they made the move. They brought somebody in, and they can give it a look-see. They can kick the tires on kind of one of the more everybody's kind of next potential bench QB to become a starter in Garoppolo. Your thoughts on the San Francisco 49ers making the move with the New England Patriots, getting themselves a possible starting quarterback, and really a team that won't be piling on the wins this year, could be getting a very, very, very high draft pick coming up next season. Was this the right move for them? What do you think, Rev?
I like the move. I like the move. I don't think they're going to start him right away from what I'm hearing.
Right.
And that might be a pretty good decision considering the fact that they don't have any receivers right now on that team. Pierre Garçon is out for the season with a neck injury. And
mm-hmm.
Joe Staley is out of the lineup with an injury of his own.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
So – you know, you take a look at that team and, you know, what do they have? They're going to have to probably feature the tight ends right now in their current state. They're going to have to feature Carlos Hyde. So, but I like the move to get Jimmy G. And I think that's going to allow them to, you know, not necessarily have to take a quarterback in the upcoming draft. Now, you know, they could build a team around them, you know. And I've heard, you know, people talk about this. What if they get Saquon Barkley in the draft and you pair him up with Jimmy Garoppolo? Now you've got something, you know. Or what if you go after a big-time receiver, something that they're missing? They, you know, they really don't have a lot of depth at the receiver position. So then, you know, now you could start building towards something if you build a team that way.
Now, one of the things about – going ahead and getting Garoppolo off of the Patriots bench is, don't forget, there are years on the QB. Don't forget, he ended last season on the bench as well with an injury, which got Jacoby Brissett in the game. So there's still a little wear on that tire as well. It's not like getting a Carson Wentz or someone like that, where, you know, he's kind of fresh from college and a little younger, not as beaten up. Garoppolo's got some years on him, not many, but has some NFL wear and tear on him. So I've got to love this move by the Niners. Again, I like getting him in here early. I like being able to take a look at him, see what you have, and if the decision can be made to go out and get somebody else, or just keep it competitive. Use what you can. Commodities are precious in the NFL, and to be able to go ahead and grab this QB. QBs are precious in the NFL, Rev, and to go ahead and make this move, I've got to love it. Now,
yeah, you know what I like about the move is now – you don't have to wait until April to get that quarterback and start developing him. You got him right now. You could start developing Jimmy Garoppolo right now. You could have the coaching staff start working with him, Kyle Shanahan start working with him right now, and get a jump start on things in terms of him, you know, really getting familiar with your system. And when I see a guy like Garoppolo, I think he's got a lot of the instincts to be a very good quarterback. You know, I kind of like liken him to Tony Romo almost. But the thing about Garoppolo, though, is that he's got to prove that he's sturdy enough to be the type of guy that's going to be able to start 16 games a season. He's a guy that's gone down with some injuries, not the biggest guy out there. So that's one of the question marks I have with Jimmy. But overall, I love the skill set. I love the instincts. And I think the upside is definitely high with Garoppolo.
I couldn't agree more there. Great, great, great analysis there. Reverend Ralph there, Joseph Haas here, Green and White Show. Now, Rev, last one before I let you go there. I know my Super Bowl prediction is way, way, way out there. I'm not ready to give up on the New England Patriots just yet, but looking ahead to to who's going to replace the New York Giants. I mean, if you're not thinking the Philadelphia Eagles, I don't know what team could be more impressive right now. Combination of ground, air attack, and defense. Give me one more team in the NFC that could replace the New York Giants in terms of a Super Bowl pick, looking at it now halfway through the season, Raf.
It's so wide open right now. I would say I'll give you a team. What about the New Orleans Saints? You know, here's a team with an established quarterback. They have multiple weapons at the receiver position.
Okay.
They have two good running backs that are complement each other very well, I think. And now they have a defense that's actually, you know, playing well and you know, being consistent each and every week, getting after the quarterback, forcing turnovers. So and they have a pretty good coaching staff as well. So why not the New Orleans Saints this year? Why can't they be a contender? They certainly have the veteran leadership. They have guys that have been there before that have done it. They do have the coaching staff that's won a Super Bowl already. I think this is a pretty dangerous team.
Wow. Reverend Ralph telling you, look out for the boys from the bye. New Orleans. They'll play and host the Tampa Bay Bucks today, looking to improve their record as well. Look how the New Orleans Saints started the season, Rev. Nobody would think we'd be talking about them as a possible Super Bowl contender after watching their defense get lit up in the first couple of weeks, watch them get scored on, and now to sit here and to basically say, yeah, they're one of the top teams in the NFL. They really haven't looked back after those first couple of weeks. You look at other exciting teams in the NFC, I just don't see it from a Detroit Lions team that always seems to spit the bit in prime time, as I like to say. You know, looking now at a team like the Green Bay Packers, who, you know, have to do it without Aaron, and even the Vikings, who have surprised Rep. They're another team that if I'm looking at it, looking for a dark horse or someone on the outside looking in, I just couldn't believe I'd be talking about the Minnesota Vikings as that kind of team. But don't look now, but they look to be, you know, just picking up where the Packers left off. So great analysis as always from our buddy the Reverend Ralph. Don't forget to join him or follow him on Twitter at Reverend Ralph. Don't forget to check him out online on Lombardi app as well. Reverend, man, it's always great when we can spend a Sunday talking some football. Can't wait to do it again. Another great slate of games. Come back again next week. Let's chop it up with some more NFL talk.
Always great talking some shop, man. Have a good day.
Always a pleasure. The Reverend Ralph Mancini joining us here on the Green and White Show. Another great NFL conversation there. Now, you made a lot of great points with looking at the New Orleans Saints as a team that could easily surprise only surprised because of how they started the season, like I mentioned, but a team that's been potent offensively for many seasons, experimented a little bit with the Adrian Peterson thing, realized that wasn't going to work, moved away from that. They're a team that will go out there, out on a limb, they'll pick up players. They're not afraid to pick up players. They're not afraid to get rid of players. Okay, Stills is in New England. Graham is in Seattle. These are stalwarts. These are mainstays on their teams just a couple of seasons ago. So they're not afraid to make the move. They're not afraid to pick up someone, and they're not afraid to go ahead and get rid of someone if that's what they feel makes them a better football team. So could they surprise? Yeah, I could see them as a challenging team. A team that is a definite disappointment after the last couple of weeks is going to be the Oakland Raiders. A lot was expected of them this season, and getting Carr back off injury and how last season ended. There was so much expected from the Oakland Raiders, and that's going to be disappointing. When that season ends up, they're gonna fly out to Miami and play in a primetime game, and we'll see what we get from the Raiders team that is still, you know, thought of by many as a competitive team with a strong, piercing defense and the ability, of course, to put up lots of points on the board. It's just been a real inconsistent season for them, and not getting the production from their new star running back Marshawn Lynch, as you would expect from a quality top back. Yep, what do you expect from a running back that comes out of retirement? I know I've said it before. I've said it many times on this show. You know, other teams' running backs. You just I just never once, other teams' running backs. That's all I got to say. the Eagles are going to try another team's running back and see how it works out for them. As the Dolphins and the Eagles were able to get together, Ajayi out of Miami in Philadelphia will be running against the no-fly zone. That I can't wait for that tussle. That one looks like a game with the makeup where no one's going to give Denver a shot offensively to play with the Eagles in this football game. However, I just can see it being a game of a turnover to the road defense picking up their offense. Maybe sometimes all it takes is a turnover. Maybe that's all Denver needs to get jump started. I could see that game being one of the surprise games of the day. So, I mean, I could also see that being a 40-10 stomping by the Eagles. But I could easily see the Denver Broncos going in on the road with all the hype that's been around the Eagles all week. They got to be reading their own press clippings. Best team in the league, Pro Bowl quarterback, MVP quarterback. They've got to be reading it. Don't think the Denver defense isn't reading it either. I see that being just as tough as the Rams season, and let's not think that Denver can't pull that one out. A great way to wrap up the NFL conversation. Love having my buddy, the Reverend Ralph, on the program. Now, let's get into the round ball, okay? The NBA. I haven't had a chance to jump into the season like I would love to. The Nets have been surprising. So I better not be missing all of the great Nets wins this season, because they've really surprised. Okay, not as good a game against the Knicks as I would have wanted, but in terms of competitiveness, in terms of giving you an entertaining product on the floor, this team has picked right up where it left off last season, catching Carino and Capstra on the radio broadcast as well. Entertaining. I didn't know how I was going to feel about it when Lynn goes down in the beginning of the season with the injury. I thought heads were going to sulk, but they haven't. They've played through it. D'Angelo Russell has been a great addition to the team. Brooke Lopez being in LA clearly missed, but they've really picked it up. They still look competitive, and I like how entertaining this team is. Way more entertaining and looks like way more ahead of the game than the New York Knicks are, just rebuilding from the back with a team that can challenge. So Nets getting a little bit of a breather this weekend. They'll be at Phoenix starting a West Coast trip this week. So I'll be able to catch a whole lot more of the Nets as they run through the West Coast. The New York Knicks. Okay, turning the team over to Kristaps Porzingis and Hardaway. And Hardaway Jr., is this what they needed to do now? Is KP going to be able to develop now without having, I guess you can call them ball hogs, like D-Rose and Melo, keeping the ball out of his hands? Now it's got to flow through KP. I want to see him stepping outside, shooting the range. He's got to tough it up a bit on his inside game, but that guy, the unicorn is what they call him. Sure enough, plays like one, and he's a phenomenal upside. It's tremendous. So with a little bit more of an ability to touch the basketball, more rotation, we'll see what's in store for KP. Other teams that have been impressive, of course the Golden State Warriors are impressive. Out of the gates, as usual, they come in and put it on the Denver Nuggets last night. So the Warriors coming in and visiting and putting a sweet little L on the Rocky Mountain Boys. Hey, got to stay with my Warriors. But a little NBA for you. Still following things out in Boston. Still following things down in Miami. Watching the new OKC and seeing what they can do. Everybody's interested in what's happened in Houston as well. So lots of different places where they've made interesting moves and roster moves that have not just changed the team, but I mean these are franchise type players. These are guys who are going to go out in your community and be the face of the team. So lots of big moves by lots of teams in the NBA. Can't wait to enjoy this upcoming season. Now the NHL. I've already gotten into the beginning of the NHL season and talked about where Ovechkin needs to be in terms of. I'm not just talking this season or regular season stats. This season, and this is legacy for him. I'm not as interested in him winning another scoring title or him keeping his team at the top near the President's Trophy. You know, all that stuff is, those are all great, but Ovechkin needs a cup. And the more I watch Crosby win and win MVPs, and the more I see Alex Ovechkin's career kind of melting, and just like the ice he plays on, will it be one of those Dan Marino type situations where you're going to watch this player put up all the numbers, but never get that cup, never get that championship? So Ovechkin, this is the season for. I'm not looking for the Capitals to dominate the regular season. I'm looking to go in possibly as a 2 or 3 seed, one of these under the radar type seasons. But it's going to end up being another Capitals Penguins Eastern Conference. I don't see the Flyers being competitive. I don't see teams like ones out in Tampa Bay being competitive. I just don't see it. It's going to be another battle between Crosby and Ovechkin this time. Ovi's got to win. He's got to win one of these, or he is going to get that Dan Marino tag that could have, should have, but never really did. And it's going to be all downhill for the Capitals after that. They're going to have to make moves in terms of rebuilding, restructuring this team. It's been built around Ovi in terms of getting him the puck as well. So the Capitals, just like the Nationals, them getting rid of Dusty Baker, which, you know, we all saw that coming once they didn't win. Never able to really get over that hump. Close enough, but not over the hump as we transition from the guys who play on the ice. So let's get back into some gridiron, because there was a very entertaining one that people didn't think was going to be as challenging as it was last night on the gridiron. Alabama, who you know, basically consensus number one, just waiting to see who they play at the end of the season. Could they get clipped? An attempt by LSU last night. Now, this game was way better than it's supposed to be. Only 24-10, but hard hitting, and not the best offensive performance by Alabama as well. Only putting up 24 points. So, will they roll Tide all the way to the championship game? We shall see. First stop, SEC championship. That's what's up to them. I've already talked about Notre Dame now. I don't see them as this power team who deserves a shot. How do you let a team like Wake Forest compete with you and still consider yourself a team that deserves a Final Four shot? But Notre Dame's going to get that love. All the way up to number 3, looking for them, and with the loss, I'm looking for them to get at least one more loss before they roll into what would be championship season. It's November. We're getting closer to bowl allocations. We're getting closer to bowl eligibility for some of these schools. Oklahoma, like I said before, in a shootout with OSU, Clemson barely holding off the Wolfpack. Some tough games last night. Tough loss again to the Big Ten, and promised I'd get into this here, Green and White Show, at Jersey Haas here, Joseph Foss NFL. TCU, in their annual battle against Texas, Texas just still looking up at a lot of the other schools, well, all except for Baylor, looking up at a lot of the schools in their state right now. Definite transition for them. Used to seeing that school being more dominant, now, you know, 4-5 and reeling and barely able to look bowl eligibility in the face here, as they only have a couple more opportunities to get those wins and get Texas into some sort of postseason performance there. You watch the W's, and I don't just mean the wins when I'm talking about college football. I'm talking about the Wisconsins, the Wyomings, the Washingtons. Wisconsin able to take one 45 points. Now, when I was talking about the Big Ten and what kind of outreach they could have, you get the losses by Ohio State, you get the losses by Penn State, and what that's going to do to the conference you look at teams that are on the bottom that look up, okay, bottom feeders in the Big Ten, yes, got to lump the Maryland's, the Rutgers, the even you know, tougher teams like Nebraska's, you got to lump them all in as the bottom feeders in the Big Ten. And then you got to look at the top teams, the Michigans, the Michigan States, the Iowas, you know, those guys, the Ohio States and Penn States. Where are they going to get there? Where are they going to get their medal from? Who's going to be the team that represents the Big Ten when it comes to championship time? Is it going to have to just be Wisconsin? Because there's almost no shot for Michigan to get themselves all the way back into it. Penn State now with a couple of losses can see themselves looking all the way out of it. The Big Ten, by realigning and bringing in teams like, you know, we all understand why they brought in Rutgers. They wanted that East Coast New York money, yeah. But bringing in teams also like the Maryland's of the world and diluting what was once a very, very, very strong conference, you see the weakness in the conference now. You see it in the Illinois of the world. You see it in the Indiana's of the world. So tough sledding for some Big Ten schools. They've got one in the power, one in the top, getting the respect they deserve, 9-0, but only ranked number 9. How about this for no respect? I already talked about the undefeated Miami Hurricanes should be talked about a lot more than they have been, and it's because the ACC football conference has gotten weaker over the past 10, 15 years. I remember this conference being so dominant, the Virginia Tech, the University of Miami matchup would have been a highlight game of major proportions, with both of them being so highly ranked, but barely a whisper on the radar. So just another, you watch that great tussle. It's 8-0 versus 7-0 versus 7-1, and still not on the radar as it should have been, but it was a good contest as well. Again, talking about the W's going down to Washington, the West Virginians of the world. Washington, manning the Pac-12, Oregon, another down season. What's it going to take for them to make a move in Oregon? Are they settled up there? That's a question for the offseason. A question for this upcoming playoff season. Will a team like a USC, which barely held off in Arizona last night in an amazing game, will a team like USC be able to, power quarterback and all, will a team like USC be able to put themselves back on the map, get themselves close enough to where they remain one of the teams that we're talking about through the season with Donald? Another good performance, but he's not striking me as some, you know, he's got to be the top pick of the draft. I'm watching him. He got outplayed last night by Tate of Arizona, who looked amazing both running and throwing the ball. You're asking me which quarterback I want from that game? I want the guy playing for Arizona, if you're really asking me. So a lot of good competitive college football on the slate as today. We're going to see a whole lot more as we get closer to the bowl season, and can't wait for that. And also can't wait to get started on my favorite portion of the show, our favorite portion of the show. That's right, folks, the Sunday conversation. We get that going, the great debate with our good buddy Brian Benway. We'll get him on the program. That's right, the district director himself. Let's pop on, let's say hello and happy Sunday to our friend Brian. Good morning and happy Sunday, my friend. I always like to find out where you are, so...
Well, yeah, happy daylight savings time, by the way. People are all around the country talking about daylight savings time. So happy daylight savings time, or as some people will call it, just standard time, because we flipped back. So I don't know. Yeah, I don't know how it affects you, but I was up earlier than ever today. So
I was up late last night enjoying another great UFC slate. So I enjoyed the extra hour of rest. Yes, I must admit that I was hugging my pillow when my mom went off.
Well, that's fun. And, you know, when you look at extra hour of rest, some people say that. But then you have the people who can't adjust, and they keep complaining about, it's an hour difference, and I just can't deal with it. And it's like, listen, it's an hour difference, and if you just go about your normal schedule, you're going to be just fine.
Right. I just... We've got a bit of a different mentality growing up where we grew up on the East Coast, my friend. Sometimes I realize that slowly but surely I've noticed that as I've moved around, as I've bounced around now out here, as the sun comes up pretty much the same for both of us as I see it floating through here, nice, bright, and sunny. I've got to ask a couple of quick ones before we get into the heaviness of our usual conversations. As we get into the November time of year, that the fall rolls in, and I mean, I would like to talk about seasons, but I know where you are. You don't even experience seasons. So I don't even know if the leaves turn colors where you are. Do you guys get any weather down there in the Houston, Texas, San Antonio area, Brian? Do you get any weather?
We do. And so it's funny, where I'm from, you know where I'm from, upstate New York near Lake Placid, we had four seasons up there, which was beautiful. And down here, where I live in the San Antonio area, right now, when you get up in the morning, it's about 40, 45 degrees, a little bit chilly, and the leaves actually do change colors here, not as spectacularly as they do up in my home area. But, yeah, we get some color changes for leaves. Once in a while, it gets down to, you know, the 30s in the morning and sometimes at night. But I look forward to, you know, going home for Christmas, just because I actually get to see some snow for a week and a half and then leave it there,
right,
and I just leave. So that's what I like about wintertime now, is I go up to my mom and dad's house now, I see snow for a week and a half, and then I get out of there, and everybody else has to deal with it for another 4 months. So that's the part that I like now about watching winter from a distance.
That's what he calls it, winter from a distance. I got to call it winter from up close and personal, my friend. I mean, I look out and I see mountains and all this good stuff. And, oh, goodness, it's going to be some kind of winter. You know, I'll be talking about it. I can't wait to do the Green and White Show live from the mountain. live from 12 feet buried in
live from the ski slopes. Those of us going down the bunny trail on the ski slopes on the show.
Now, that's what I know you're next. I will not be doing one from the ski slopes, buddy. That is what you know you're not getting the skis. You know you're not getting me off the skis. We're not even trying that one. Brian, that way there, Joseph Foss. You're having a little fun in the morning. Good morning and happy Sunday. Hope everybody's enjoying themselves, enjoying ourselves here on the Green and White Show. A little great debate time. I want to get into a little bit of what I did to you last night. And, not in particular, but just on a night where I just can't remember ever seeing this, Brian, we had three champions all go down on one night. And I mean, just in succession, watching Rose Yamachulis, Joanna Jędrzejczyk, watching TJ Dillashaw take out Cody Galbraith, watching GSP just really dominate Michael Bisping, and you know, coming off a 4-year hiatus to take the belt. I mean, just watching champion after champion after champion go down. I can't think of another night in sports where something like that happened, where you just saw a complete shift in an entire organization. I just can't think of one. I know you, with your background in sports media, so many years of covering not just the fight game, but hockey as well. I mean, can you think of some sort of equivalence in any of your, you know, history or background of covering sports where you can just, where just an entire organization changes overnight? You got three new champions.
First, I'll start off by saying, and you and I talk about this on the show before, whenever you have an event in Madison Square Garden, it always just pushes it up a notch. And UFC, finally, like we talked about, I think they've had two or three events now at MSG since it became legal in New York State. So number one, I think everybody always gets more fired up when they're in Madison Square Garden, no matter if it's UFC, no matter if it's the Charlotte Hornets playing the New York Knicks or what have you. Everybody always gets a little bit more amped up at MSG, and you could tell that the atmosphere was fantastic last night. And by the way, fun fact, my man, I was at GSP's last fight 4 years ago. So I was in Las Vegas during his last fight. So I saw the man go out, and I said, oh, I wonder if we'll ever see him again. And he comes out last night, and he looks like he did in 2013. It was pretty spectacular to see when you don't have a match or a fight for 4 years and you come out like that swinging and you come out and win a championship. And I follow some pretty good guys on Twitter who I know the sport very well. They cover it inside and out. And a couple of them were tweeting and talking about that might have been the best UFC event of all time just because of the number of championships that switched hands and the intensity and the atmosphere. And you know what? I would have a very hard time arguing with that idea that was the greatest UFC event of all time. And like you said, three championships changing hands in one night. And I'm trying to rack my brain to kind of answer part of your question about an organization changing overnight based on one event. And I can't think of one right now, but I will tell you this. I would be inclined to agree with a couple of the folks that are very big into UFC that know the sport that might have been the greatest, if not one of the top one, two, or three nights in the history of UFC just because of the three titles changing hands and at Madison Square Garden.
That's exactly where I was going to go with that. Brian Benway here, Brian Benway there, Joseph Haas here, Green and White Show. Brian, that is exactly what this, an event, it's not just about the event. It's not just about what's going to take place. It's about the atmosphere around it, where it's located, the build-up before it. I might just have to step a little bit further than your friends online. I've been talking about it all. I haven't stopped thinking about it since I saw it. And that had to be, and I'm going to include the entire fight game. I'm talking boxing as well. You have to put that event last night, it being held in the mecca of boxing, it being held in Madison Square Garden, the championships changing hands, and then, Brian, the undercard. There were seven or eight fights on this card that were amazing fights. You had KO knockouts. You had OST with a punch knockout. You had Greg Hardy, an NFL football player, making his MMA debut. Everything else that went on around this event, this fight event, to me makes it's up there in the top two or three of all-time fighting events from beginning to end. We've had great fights that had lousy undercards. We had not so good fights that had tremendous undercards. Brian, last night was you couldn't stop watching it. I didn't want it to end. And at the end, GSP holding up the belt, and you're just like, wow, this is how this night needed to end. And you just felt the buildup. It was just outstanding performances, whether it was the arena that brought it out of the fighters or what. And you know what? Here's one thing I'm loving so far. Not hearing any whispers of PEDs or anything like that in terms of you know, the results of the fights last night. I'm still going to cross my fingers, but you know, we both understand the fight game, so we'll give it a week. we'll give it a week.
Right, I agree. Because, you know, we've seen that happen. We've had great fights before, and all of a sudden, 6 days later, so-and-so failed his drug test, so.
Right. Well, we can go to John Jones, Daniel Cormier, to just a few months ago. We can go back just a little bit further to Brock Lesnar and Mark Hunt. We can list them. So we'll wait a week for the test to come in. Let's get into a little bit more of the seriousness that goes on about us. We've gone through the hurricane kind of relief season, which it's sad to know. We've got to call it a season when the battering of the lower portion of the United States, as far as the Texas area, and you know, we've got to deal with other kind of more serious situations, and we're dealing with violence, whether it be what happened in Tribeca this week, or whether it be what happened even locally somewhere, you know, in the suburban Denver area. You're getting somebody, you know, walking into a Walmart or something and deciding that's how he wanted to spend his day, ruining the lives of three innocent people and countless others who were impacted by the violence. You know, we've talked about it more than once, Brian, and this is, you know, a conversation which you know, stuff that we have to have about, you know, who gets guns, where the guns come from, why so many, and all this other stuff. And I don't ever want to think, man, this conversation is starting to get a little old, because it apparently, no matter how many times, you know, people talk about it, I guess there's a lot of people that just aren't listening, or are stuck on what they're stuck on, and the things like this don't impact them, don't make anybody want to stop and think. I never understand, like, when the next one happens. I always understand why there was no change since the last one happened. So let's go ahead and have a conversation about that. And maybe what people think is, you know, it has to be like large, sweeping changes in terms of gun laws and restrictions. And maybe what people need to do is kind of step back and realize that maybe this thing has to be done in really small steps. Maybe that's what has to be done. But Brian, I want to get your thoughts on what you think a great way to kind of get the conversation, not just in front of everybody, but to get people talking about change, because like it or not, in this day and age, something needs to be done different with what we're seeing today, Brian.
First, I want to start off, and I remember you and I talking right after the Las Vegas shooting about a month and a half ago, and it started to talk about gun control. And I remember one thing that I said to you, and I'm going to bring it back up. I said, bad people are going to do bad things if they want to. It doesn't matter how many rules and restrictions are out there. I'll give you a great example. The event you mentioned in New York City this past week, it wasn't a shooting. It wasn't a stabbing. It was somebody who had hate in his heart and wanted to do harm. So what did he do? He drove a truck down and killed 8 people. So that brings me back, Haas, to what I told you when we were talking about Las Vegas, is it's not necessarily about gun violence. It's about people that if they want to do something terrible, if they want to kill people, they're going to do whatever they can to do it. It doesn't matter if it's a stabbing. It doesn't matter if it's a shooting. It doesn't matter if it's what we saw in New York City with the truck attack. So I think that I still stand on that, is if somebody wants to do harm to people, they're going to find a way to do it. So I'll start there. Now, as far as your question goes, as not having sweeping changes but starting somewhere, I think the most effective form of government is always local. And there's a saying in politics, all government and all politics are local. Because at the end of the day, it doesn't matter if it's the tax reform that we're seeing, what does that most likely end up impacting? You and I, locally. It doesn't matter if it's your mayor or your city council enacting no texting while driving. Who does that affect? You, because you live in that town or in that city. So you look at government, everything comes down to local. It doesn't matter if it's something federal or state or in your city or town. It all comes down to how does it affect you. So I think if you look at it that way, and we start kind of giving you an example or maybe a suggestion or an idea of starting small, I think if you, and I'll go to what you and I have talked about before, the quote-unquote gun control or, you know, looking at how to do that. I think if you look at localities, you know, sports events, sports venues, what do they have? They have metal detectors. Schools in a lot of times inner cities, but sometimes now schools in different types of cities, in rural areas, have their own way to get metal detectors in schools, because you never know. I mean, we saw Columbine. You know, I'm going to bring that up just because that is in a town that, you know, not a lot of people have knew, and nobody knew the name of that school before. So I don't think it has to necessarily have that type of protections in inner cities. You can look at rural areas, because let's face it, things can happen anywhere. We've seen that. So I think if you want to look at it that way, you have your local police forces. Here in Texas, the legislature passed a law in Texas now that all peace officers, so your police departments, sheriff's officers, they now have bulletproof vests that are can withstand rifle shots. So I think you put that in the hands of your local police department, your sheriff's department, and have them be a little bit more vigilant. I don't know if it's, you know, doing metal detectors in every workplace. I don't know if it's doing searches in every workplace. I'm not exactly sure, but I know where you're coming from, because it seems like every other week, every 2 weeks, something like that, we see something like we saw in New York, something what mm-hmm. we saw, like you're talking about, out your way in Colorado. So I think what needs to really happen, and this is very, very hard, but you have to be willing to sit down, federal government, state government, city government, county government, and have the conversations together. You have to have everybody in the room hearing the same thing so we can try and get some new ideas. And also, you have to be able to listen to the other side of the argument. That a lot of times, and we see it now in politics and in government more than we ever have, the left doesn't want to listen to anything the right has to say, and a lot of times the right doesn't want to listen to anything that the left has to say. That's a problem, because it's kind of like in a marriage. If you have a husband and wife who have complete opposite ideas of what the house should be cleaned and you don't talk about it, guess what? It's not going to get any better. So you have to get levels of government together talking about it, and you have to be able to listen to options and to ideas. Until people start doing those two things, you're not going to see any type of change or any new ideas out there at all.
Not just a man who knows his legislature, but a man who can also provide great marital advice. That's right. That's our buddy.
Marital advice from a single guy, by the way.
But then we're there, Joseph. Us here. I love the thoughts of the analogy. It was pretty spot on. That was pretty good there. Communication. It is about talking, and it is about listening, and it's about listening to the other side and hearing what they have to say, sometimes agreeing to disagree, but agreeing that a solution or that a problem exists and a solution needs to be sought. If that can be something that everybody agrees on, then you can get into a room together and maybe not all share the same ideas about the hows and the whys, but at least if you can come together and say there is a problem and we need to find a solution to it. Those should be two pretty key points that anybody should be able to walk into a room and discuss. I'm glad that we can always, whether we agree or disagree, can always sit around and have ourselves a great discussion. My buddy Brian Benway, always a pleasure having him join us here on the program for a Sunday conversation. Brian, I hope you enjoy yourself. A very wonderful Sunday. I hope you got a little bit of rest. I know you popped up early. Enjoy a little extra sunshine. Wait, so did we get extra sunshine, or did we lose the sunshine early, or what's it going? You know, I've been doing this for so long, I just forget now. And I'm in a new place, so who knows what kind of sunshine I'm going to get. But which one is it?
Well, so daylight savings time, this one is where you so there's spring ahead, where you go ahead forward, and that's when it's going to be daylight until 8 or 9 o'clock at night. So that's spring ahead.
Okay, so we're
and, this, and we just did fall back. So it's going to get lighter earlier, but it's going to get darker earlier. So it's going to get dark about 5 o'clock, depending on where you live. So this one is the one that I don't like, because I like it when it's darker, when it's lighter out later at night, so 8, 9 o'clock at night, because, you know, that way you can do stuff later at night and you don't feel as tired. So this is the one that I really don't like, where it gets light earlier, so it gets darker right around dinner time. This one is the one that I don't like. So if you're an early bird like me, though, you get up at, you know, 5 o'clock in the morning anyway, and it's already light
there
outside.
There you go.
So if you want to get more light, get up early. So this is the one where we fall back, where we lose the daylight around dinner time, which kind of stinks, but that's the one that we're at right now.
I've not eaten dinner in the dark, and I've just not, oh, goodness. There goes the sun. Afternoon sunsets here. That's what we're doing. Brian, always a pleasure, my man. Much appreciated. So we got marital advice. We got a little legislation going. We got sports, and we even got some astrology and weather for my man, Brian Benway. Can't wait to see what we get next week. Always a pleasure, my friend. Make sure you say hey to the fam, as always. Thanks, and a pleasure having you on. Can't wait to chat it up again next week, Brian.
I always love coming out. I'm surprised you didn't ask me about the Astros winning the World Series.
I remember, I'm a Mets fan, so I'm still a little, yeah.
By the way, I know that I have to get off. I know I have to get off the line, but I'll just say this. I've never seen more Houston Astros fans in my entire 12 years of living in Texas than I see right now. That's all I'm going to say about that.
Oh, the Houston Astros fans. Oh, goodness. Oh, there's home. That's not even. Okay, well, yeah, let's look at. Hey, Houston, guess what? It's football season now. Ooh. Ooh. Okay, I'll leave it alone. Brian, I'll chat with you later, homeboy. Stay cool.
Have a great
Brian
day.
Brian Benway on the you too, man. Brian Benway on the program here joining us. Great Sunday conversation as usual. Great debate. Talked it back and forth. Always a lot of fun. Great having fun with all of you. Thank you all for listening as you always do. Yep, that's right. We'll come on back next week. Chop it up, more sports and fun as usual. We'll talk fight game. We'll talk football game. We'll talk baseball game. Well, if it's a game, we'll talk about it. And even if it's not, we'll talk about it. So as we always say here at the end of the show, thanks so much for listening. God bless. Go Jets. Turn us up.
Diversity Music Group. Alex H. The Bomb Factory. Success.
Ladies and gentlemen, allow me to properly introduce the most incredible beast from the east, live and live in color, in shape fitted to leather and soft butter. Color up, my dollars up, I'm winning exotic cars and women and more women. More sinning, I'm addicted to success. Blessed, young and gifted, the bar's been lifting. Started from the bottom, I'm now on top of the world. Look, ma, I made it, the new most hated. Underestimated since I haven't been painting. Our stories aren't related, so they don't believe. But who cares, I'ma run a few years before I fade to black. My impact shift back to order to lyrical manslaughter. In the first degree, I'm the young, fresh, fresh,